Hello, and welcome to Fantastic Comic Fan. I am your host, R.T. Fleming, and it is my mission to help you find your next digital comic book pick from the golden age to now. I have been reading comic books for over 40 years, and have never lost my passion for comic books. It's something I try to pass on to old and new readers. It's Monday, the start of the week, and the first day of the month, and not just any day, but April Fool's Day 2024, and more on that in a minute. But there's no fooling around, folks. After another brief hiatus, I'm back at it once again, and this makes episode 154 of the show. Okay, it was more than a bit of a brief hiatus, more like 2 months since my last show. I'm not going to go into details of things because I want to focus on fantastic comic books and creators and putting out a good podcast. I hope to be on a more regular schedule and run through some of the tapes I had with guests from the past few months. I'll probably have a few guests on here and there, but mostly I think for a bit I'm going to focus on some solo shows. I want to build the podcast up with these shows without the pressure and responsibilities that guests bring to a show. I'm going to have guests on again, but not quite right now. I guess you can look at it as going back to the basics and a reset. Much like that sentiment ripples through real life. The last 18 months have been beyond words, and that says a lot coming from someone who never shuts up. Once I get back in the swing of things in more ways than one, I'll bring on some more guests to talk about comics. But then, we'll see what goes on. But this is now. And for this show, right now, I have several sort of guests, kind of. So I went over to the two AI chatbots, Copilot, which is Microsoft, and the more global brand, ChatGTP, and started to ask them some random comic book questions. For example, I asked about Stan Goldberg. For me, that's the other Stan at Marvel, who made contributions to the Marvel mythos. I asked about Silver Age and Golden Age stuff and Marvel Legacy, and, well, stick around and see the results. I think you might be surprised. If you're new to the podcast, thanks for checking it out. Hope you continue to sample the show. Please look at the show notes, follow the podcast on social media, and subscribe. I do want this podcast to continue to grow, and as I said, introduce fans to a different way of discovering and reading fantastic comic book. Now on today's April Fool's Day episode, where I interview some chatbots. Hope you enjoy it. For the non-techie out there, you can consider ChatGPT as if you're going to your local library and starting to pepper a reference library with questions. Any good reference library will start beaming, and you'll still be there 3 hours later, maybe four, collecting information. Besides putting out the podcast, I try when things are not so wonky in real life to post something every day on my social media feeds. It's hard to find fresh content or some factoid I might come across. So I started dipping my toes and asking questions to some of these ChatGPT models out there. Now, back in early March, I asked it for some notable comic creators who were born between March 1st and March 7th. At the time, it did give me some, but at least one of them, Steve Ditko, was wrong. He was born in November. It did get the year right in the year that he died. Part of using that, and so I don't have to go digging around to verify things. Also, there was no citation, so I have no idea where it was pulling this information from. But did I find it useful? Yes. Did I find it useless? Not at all. And as for that birthday question, I did not try to tweak it or try different things. In fact, as I got a better understanding of how the chat thing worked, I in turn was able to ask better questions. I, in my spare time, like to explore the history of comic books because I think it's important to understand who influenced today's creators. And not taking anything away from Stan Lee, but the other Marvel staffers who made important contributions who should be recognized. I like to call him the other Stan, Stan Goldberg, or Maurice Severn, or John Severn, or any of these creators that we don't even remember because there's so many decades. They need to be recognized. I also believe new and diehard fans need to read comic books outside of their box. One of my mantras has always been that there are fantastic reads from all comic eras if read within the context of the times. While I do enjoy the current Spidey mythos, there's a certain simplicity, charm, fantastic storytelling from those early Silver Age stories that I go back every few years to read. You don't even need to spend a lot of money. There are tons of legal digital ways of borrowing countless comic books, and there are thousands upon thousands of public domain comic books out there too. Now I just know I turned off a few fans by even mentioning the word digital. But digital have their place and they help the industry grow. I personally read everything digitally, and I've long since missed having a print copy in my hand. My lifestyle, digital just works so much better for me. Now, some of the things I asked ChatGPT, I had some working knowledge. Some things were new to me, and some of it I did a little surface research to see just how good they were about talking about things. And overall, it seemed to be a pretty good thing. One of the first things I asked is to give me a short essay on the difference between Silver and Golden Age comics. I wanted something that hopefully sounded good for somebody like me that was knowledgeable and somebody that's new who don't know what it is. And this is what it came up with. Silver and Golden Age comics represent two distinct eras in the history of comic books, each characterized by unique styles, themes, and cultural contexts. The Golden Age of comics, which spanned roughly from the late 1930s to early 1950s, is known for its pioneering spirit and the birth of iconic characters such as Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Captain America. During this era, comic books emerged as a popular form of entertainment, particularly in the United States. Golden Age comics often featured colorful, larger-than-life heroes fighting against evil villains, reflecting the optimism and patriotism of the time. Themes of justice, morality, and triumph of good over evil were prevalent, serving as escapism for readers during the tumultuous years of World War II and its aftermath. In contrast, the Silver Age of comics, which began in the late 1950s and lasted into the early 1970s, marked a period of innovation and revitalization within the industry. This era saw the reintroduction of classic superheroes alongside the creation of new ones such as Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, and the X-Men. Silver Age comics embraced a more sophisticated approach to storytelling, incorporating complex characters with human flaws and relatable struggles. The era also witnessed a shift towards science fiction with stories exploring outer space, time travel, and other fantastical concepts. Additionally, the Silver Age introduced the concept of interconnected universes with characters from different series crossing over and interacting with one another, laying the groundwork for the shared continuity that defines modern comic book storytelling. Overall, while both Golden and Silver Age comics play significant roles in shaping the comic book medium and popular culture as a whole, they are distinguished by their respective tones, themes, and narrative styles. Golden Age comics are celebrated for their timeless heroes and straightforward morality, while Silver Age comics are revered for their innovation, complexity, and willingness to push the boundaries of storytelling. Together, these two eras form the foundation upon which the rich tapestry of comic book history continues to evolve and thrive. And again, all that came from me prompting in there a short essay on the difference between Silver and Golden Age comics. And going through a grammar checker and all that, it was flawless. I thought it came up spookily very well. Would I use something like this to create content? I would probably use it as a guide, but no, I would not use this as my content and say it was my content because I don't think it has my distinctive voice. And it's good for, as you can see, coming up with the information, but it's not in my voice. And no matter how good the chat is, I don't think it can do my voice. But it's a great research tool, and let's go on some other cool stuff that I found out while I was doing this. Hold on. Now, I approached this as a newbie who's just kind of getting into the comic book field, but using in the background some of the stuff that I know as a comic book creator. So the next question I asked ChatGPT was, what are some public domain Golden Age comic books I should read? And here's what it came up with. There are several classic Golden Age comics that are now in public domain and available for reading. Some notable ones include Adventures of Captain Marvel by Fawcett Comics, The Spirit by Will Eisner, which I don't think is in public domain. There's an error. Same thing with Dick Tracy by Chester Gould, The Phantom by Lee Falk, Plastic Man by Jack Cole, Black Terror by Standard Comics, Blue Beetle by Fox Comics, Captain Midnight by Fawcett Comics, Airboy by Hillman Periodicals, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle by Fiction House. A good variety of stuff there. It goes on. These comics offer a glimpse into the early days of comic book storytelling and the origins of many beloved characters and genres. You can find many of them online through various platforms that offer public domain comics. And I went on and asked it another question about Golden Age. Golden Age creators, I should know. It starts off very chattily. Certainly. Here are some influential creators from the Golden Age of comics. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman, debuted in Action Comics No. 1 in 1938, laying the foundation for the superhero genre. Bob Kane and Bill Finger, co-creators of Batman, who first appeared in Detective Comics No. 27 in 1939, revolutionizing the superhero genre with a darker, more detective-oriented approach. Jack Kirby, a prolific writer and artist who co-created Captain America with Joe Simon and later on to create numerous iconic characters such as Fantastic Four, the X-Men, Thor, the Hulk, and many others. Pause. Now, yes, we all know that Stan Lee co-created. It would have been nice to have said he co-created the Fantastic Four and some of the other characters with the X-Men. But let's not quibble. For a chat robot, it's not doing that bad, folks. It's kind of scary. Let's go on. The next one was Will Eisner, known for creating The Spirit, a groundbreaking crime-fighting hero, and for his pioneering work in the development of the graphic novel format. Stan Lee, here we go, co-creator of many Marvel comic characters alongside artists like Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, including Spider-Man, The Avengers, The X-Men, and Fantastic Four. Joe Simon, co-creator of Captain America, alongside Jack Kirby and a key figure in the early days of comic publishing. Bill Everett, creator of Namor the Submariner, one of Marvel Comics' earliest superheroes and co-creator of Daredevil. Jack Cole, creator of Plastic Man, a whimsical and innovative superhero with a distinctive visual style. I'm going to pause. For a chat robot to come up with a whimsical and innovative superhero with a distinctive visual style, that's pretty good. It goes on now with Gardner Fox, a prolific writer who created or co-created numerous characters for DC Comics, including The Flash, Hawkman, and Justice Society of America. Kyle Burgos, creator of The Human Torch, one of Marvel's earliest superheroes and a pioneer of the superhero genre. These creators play pivotal roles in shaping the comic book industry and laying the groundwork for many of the characters and stories that continue to captivate audiences today. Folks, that's not bad for a person putting together an essay or anybody who really doesn't know about comic books. I'm just amazed with that one question. So I wanted to go again back into the Golden Age. Let's do some lesser known Golden Age creators I should know. That was the prompt. And again, it did us a little cheery, certainly. Here are some lesser known, but influential Golden creators you should know. Pardon me if I get some of the names correct. I'm horrible with names. Fletcher Hanks, known for his surreal and often bizarre storytelling style. Hanks created characters like Stardust the Super Wizard, Fatima, the Mystery Woman of the Jungle, which showcased his unique approach to the medium. Mac Raboy, best known for his work on Captain Marvel Jr. and Green Llama. Raboy was admired for his dynamic artwork and intricate storytelling. Matt Baker, one of the few African-American comic book artists of the Golden Age. Baker was known for his exceptional skills in drawing beautiful women, as seen in his work on titles like Phantom Lady and Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. Matt Baker in particular, I'm pausing, I studied this man. Whoever pulled the stuff up about Matt Baker, it's pretty on point. It's very spooky how on point some of the stuff is. Let's go on. The next one I pulled up Why? Not really sure. Ogden Whitney, a versatile artist and writer, Whitney created the characters like Herbie, Popnecker, a chubby boy with superpowers, and worked on various genres ranging from superheroes to humor comics. Bob Powell, known for his work on horror, crime, and romance comics, Powell's dynamic artwork graced titles like Black Cat, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, and The Shadow. Lou Fine, a master of intricate line work and dynamic composition, Fine's work on characters like the Black Condor and Dowman showcases talent for creating visually stunning superhero stories. Mort Meskin. Meskin worked on a variety of various superhero and adventure titles during the Golden Age, including The Wildcat, Vigilante, and Johnny Quick, demonstrating his versatility as an artist. Irwin Hassan, best known for co-creating the character Wildfinger with Bill Finger. Hassan also worked on titles like Dandy and Green Arrow during the Golden Age. Lee Elias. Elias worked on a wide range of genres during the Golden Age, including horror, crime, and romance comics. His detailed artwork brought to life characters like the Black Cat and the Green Llama. John Sauraldo was known for his work on adventure comics, particularly his long run on Tarzan and his contributions to Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. These creators may be lesser known compared to some of the industry giants, though their contributions to the Golden Age of comics are significant and continue to influence storytelling today. Objectively, it's not bad. I don't really see it having much of a bias. I mean, you might want to quibble, but a lot of this is pretty good information. I wanted to dig even deeper, so I asked again about Golden Age. What else is Jack Cole known for besides Plastic Man? ChatGPT. In addition to creating Plastic Man, Jack Cole is known for versatility and contributions to various comic book genres. Here are some of his notable works and accomplishments. Humor Comics. Before creating Plastic Man, Jack Cole worked in various humor strips for quality comics, including the Esky, Pee Wee Throttle, The Claw. His humor writing and cartooning skills were evident in these early works. Crime Comics. Cole also made significant contributions to crime comics, particularly with his creation of Midnight the Wildcat, a character who fought crime as a costume vigilante. Midnight debuted in the Smash Comics number 18 in 1941. Social Commentary. Cole's work often features social commentary and satire, addressing issues such as racism, politics, and sociological norms. He infused his stories with wit and humor while tackling serious subjects. Innovative Storytelling. Cole was known for his innovative storytelling techniques, including dynamic panel layouts, expressive character designs, and bold use of color. He experimented with visual storytelling in ways that pushed the boundaries of the medium. His crime fighter comics, apart from Plastic Man and Midnight, Cole created crime-fighting characters such as the Death Patrol and the Phantom Lady. His contributions to the crime and superhero dramas helped shape landscapes of the Golden Age comics. Influenced on later creators, Jack Cole's work continues to inspire comic book creators to this day, which again, folks, pausing, why you need to study your past creators. Back to Jack Cole. The chat went on. His innovative storytelling, distinctive art style, pioneering approach to humor and satire have left a lasting legacy in the comic book industry. Overall, Jack Cole is a multifaceted creator whose contributions extended beyond Plastic Man, leaving an indelible mark on the Golden Age of comics and influencing generations of comic book creators to come. Wow, that is amazing from one little question. Now, if I was doing a college essay or something, I could cut and paste most of this stuff, which is scary that you could actually do that. I wouldn't do that. I would use this as a guide because my voice is important. I'm not sure. It might be. I didn't have time. Maybe I can go into the ChatGPT and find out where it pulled this information out to get an idea. Now, I did look up another character on the stuff from the Golden Age, Irwin Hassan, and I actually fact-checked it, and it was pretty much on point here. So I said, who was Irwin Hassan? And this was what ChatGPT did say, that I did go back through and look and go, yeah, it was pretty on point here. So ChatGPT, Irwin Hassan was an American comic book artist and best known for his work during the Golden Age of comics. Born on July 18th, 1918, Hassan began his career in the late 1930s and worked primarily for DC Comics. His notable for co-creating the characters Wildcat with writers Bill Finger, which first appeared in Sensation Comics number 1 in 1942. Wildcat, also known as Ted Grant, was a skilled boxer who fought crime without any superpowers. Hassan also worked on other titles for DC Comics, including Green Lantern, The Flash, who was known for his clean and dynamic art style, which suited action-oriented stories well. Hassan's contributions to the comic book industry extended beyond his artwork. He was also involved in forming the National Cartoon Society and was an active member of the comic book community throughout his life. Hassan passed away March 13, 2015, leaving behind a legacy of iconic characters and memorable artwork from the golden age of comics. Again, wow. I am completely dumbfounded by how these little chat things can pull some stuff up. Well, we've got more. Let's take a quick pause, and we will be talking some stuff about Fantastic Four and the Silver Age. So hold on here. I'm going to stay on this topic for Golden Age comics for just one more minute. Now again, here's the prompt, and listen to what it came up with. Whatever happened to comic book publisher Quality Comics? Quality Comics was a prominent comic book publisher during the Golden Age of comics. They were known for characters like Plastic Man, Blackhawk, and the Freedom Fighters. Technically, that's not true. Freedom Fighters came later when DC did it in the 70s, but go on. However, they faced financial difficulties in the 1950s due to declining comic book sales and competition from other publishers. In 1956, they ceased publishing new material and sold their characters to DC Comics, which subsequently integrated them into their own universe. Today, characters like Plastic Man and Blackhawk continue to appear in DC Comics publications. Not too bad. Only problem was the Freedom Fighters, which was a group of Quality characters that DC created long after Quality went out of control, went out of print. Then I asked, how important was Golden Age publisher of Quality Comics? Quality Comics was highly important during the Golden Age of comics. They were one of the leading publishers known for producing iconic characters and series that contributed to the foundation of the comic book industry. Characters like Plastic Man, Blackhawk, and the Spirit were innovative and influential, shaping the superhero genre and inspiring generations of creators. Quality Comics also played a significant role in popularizing comic books as a form of entertainment during that era. While they faced challenges and eventually ceased publishing new material, their legacy lives on through their characters, many of which are still cherished by fans today. Not bad again. How accurate is it? Pretty close to being accurate. Might be able to quibble here and there, but it's more right than wrong. Let's go on with more Quality Comics. And this I know, because I did a little research. But who are some of the creators who worked at the publisher Quality Comics? ChatGPT. Several notable creators worked at Quality Comics during its heyday in the Golden Age of comics. Some of these creators included Jack Cole, created Plastic Man, one of Quality Comics' most iconic characters. Walt Eisner created the Spirit, a classic character known for his innovative storytelling techniques. Bob Powell worked on various titles for Quality Comics, including Black Hawk and Lady Luck. Reed Crandall, known for his work on Black Hawk and other titles. Chuck Kudera, I think, co-created Black Hawk and worked on other Quality Comics. Jack Kirby, he worked briefly at Quality Comics before moving on to other publishers where he later co-created characters like Captain America. These creators, among others, made significant contributions to Quality Comics lineup and helped shape the Golden Age of comic books. Again, if I was writing a college essay, it's not too bad, folks. I could do a little research and it would get a pretty good grade. Let me go on. If I wanted, how could I read some comic books from Quality Comics? ChatGPT. There are several ways you can read comic books from Quality Comics. Digital platforms. Many of Quality Comics have been digitized and available for subscription on digital platforms like Comixology, DC Universe, and Marvel Infinite. No, that's not true. Marvel Unlimited has nothing to do that. Comicology might have some of the quality reprints, but not really. DC Universe Infinite has a few Golden Age, but not many. Reprints. Some of quality comics popular titles have been reprinted in collected conditions or anthologies. You can check your local comic book store or online retailer for reprints of titles like Plastic Man, Black Hawk, or The Spirit. Most likely The Spirit and Will Eisner than Plastic Man or Black Hawk. They talk about libraries, specialty comic book stores. And then I said, well, are there any websites to read public domain comic books? ChatGPT goes on, yes, there are several websites where you can read public domain comic books for free. Here are a few options. Digital Comic Museum. This website specializes in providing access to public domain comic books, including many of the Golden Age of comics. You can borrow their collection by title, publisher, or genre. Comic Book Plus, which I personally use myself, offers a wide range of public domain comic books, including titles from various publishers and genres. Their website allows you to read comics online or download them for offline reading. Project Gutenberg. Didn't know this. New for me. I haven't checked it out. While primarily known for offering free ebooks, Project Gutenberg also has a collection of public domain comics available for download in various formats. Internet Archive. The archive hosts a variety of collections of public domain materials, including comic books. You can search the catalog for comic books from different eras and publishers. These websites provide access to a treasure trove, nice, of classic comic books that are in the public domain, allowing you to explore and enjoy vintage comics for free. Nicely written, I can't complain. Then I asked, what are public domain comic books? ChatGPT. Public domain comic books are comic book titles, characters, and stories that are no longer protected by copyright and are freely available for use by anyone. In general, works enter the public domain when their copyright expires, typically after a certain number of years following the creator's death or after a specific period of time has elapsed since publication. Comic books published before the 1920s are generally in public domain due to copyright expiration. Additionally, some older comic book characters and stories may fall into public domain if the copyrights were not properly renewed and if they were explicitly dedicated to the public domain by the creators or copyright holders. Public domain comic books can be freely distributed, adapted, and reused by anyone without need for permission, payment, or royalties. This allows for greater accessibility and creativity in using these classic characters, stories, new projects such as for reprints, adaptations, and derivative works. So there's that coverage on the Golden Age. For a fan like myself, it's pretty good. For somebody who's not into comic books that much, it's not that wonky and off base. I think it does a really good job of balancing the various needs for anybody that might be interested in Golden Age type comic books. There's more. Hold on 1 second. We'll get on to the next section of this special show. Now, I did one more experiment with ChatGPT, and this focused on the Silver Age. Now, I said at the beginning, I don't take away from Stan Lee or Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko for their contributions to Marvel, but there's other people involved that should equally be acknowledged. Maybe we should know they weren't Stan Lee and they weren't Steve Ditko, but John Severin, Maurice Severin, and this guy, Stan Goldberg. They should all be recognized. Now, I heard that Steve Ditko is getting into some kind of Hall of Fame down in Disney. It was up to me. Everybody from that bullpen era would just be automatically inducted because of their great contributions. So I know a little bit about Stan Goldberg. So I wanted to see what it could come up with. So I asked the first question, who created the colors for Spider-Man Fantastic Four? Spider-Man's colors were created by Steve Ditko, while the colors Fantastic Four were created by Jack Kirby. Both artists were instrumental in shaping the visual identities of these iconic comic book characters. Whether it's 100% true, I'm not going to say. This is what it pulled together. So I dug down a little bit deeper because it didn't give me exactly what I want. So I said, who was a popular colorist at Marvel Comics during the Silver Age? And bing, here's what it came up with. During the Silver Age of Marvel Comics, one of the popular colors was Stan Goldberg. He was known for his work on various titles, including The Amazing Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. His vibrant color choices helped bring these characters to life on the page. And that's what I was looking for. That was his contributions, one of his many contributions to Marvel during the Silver Age. Let's go on with a little more Stan Goldberg. My next question in this little fake interview about Stan Goldberg was, what was Stan Goldberg's contributions to Marvel Comics? Stan Goldberg made significant contributions to Marvel Comics during the Silver Age. He was primarily known for his work as a colorist, providing vibrant and dynamic colors to numerous Marvel titles, including The Amazing Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, The Incredible Hulk, and many others. Additionally, Goldberg was an accomplished artist known for his work on such titles as Millie the Model and Patsy Walker. His talent and creativity played a crucial role in shaping the visual appeal of Marvel Comics during that era. And right there, ChatGPT nailed it on Stan Goldberg's contributions. Because before Spider-Man and Avengers came along, Millie the Model and the Westerns, that type of stuff was Marvel's bread and butter. That's where Marvel made their money. And Millie the Model and some of these other things, they need to be recognized for what they did. So I went on and I wanted to know a little bit more about Millie the Model. So I went, who is known for Millie the Model? And it said, Millie the Model was a comic book character created by writer Stan Lee and artist Stan DiCarlo. Dan DiCarlo is particularly known for his work on Millie the Model, having helped establish her as one of Marvel Comics' most enduring popular characters in the romance comic genre. Not bad. I didn't do a whole lot of research, but it sounds pretty good. But it didn't give me exactly what I wanted. So I told it just this. Stan Goldberg and Millie the Model. And it came back and apologized. Here's what it says. It freaked me out when it apologized. It goes, I apologize for the oversight. Stan Goldberg was indeed known for his work on Millie the Model during his time at Marvel Comics. He provided art and coloring for the series, contributing to his distinctive style and popularity during the Silver Age of comics. There we go. Not bad. And again, I was talking about Millie the Model being part of the bread and butter. So I asked ChatGPT, how important was Millie the Model at Marvel Comics? The response was, Millie the Model was an important character at Marvel during the 50s and the 60s, particularly in the realm of romance comics. While not as prominent as superheroes like Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, Millie the Model and other romance comics played a significant role in Marvel's publishing lineup during the era. These romance comics appealed to a different demographic, primarily female readers, and helped Marvel diversify offerings beyond the superhero genre. Millie the Model herself became an iconic character within the genre and continued Marvel's overall success in the comic book industry. Again, I've studied Millie the Model. I've talked about Millie the Model. I wish there was more Millie the Model out there. Marvel has not archived very many Millie the Model comic books, but that's another story. So I wanted to go even deeper into this thing to see just how good it was. So I'm trying to throw it with another question. It hasn't failed me yet. So I said, how many Millie the Model comics made? And here's what it came up with. And listen to the terminology when it's done. Millie the Model had a substantial run in comics with numerous issues published over the years. The exact number of Millie the Model comics produced depends on various factors, including different series, one-shots, and reprints. However, Millie the Model was featured in her own title for over two decades, with hundreds of issues published during that time. Overall, her comic series had a significant presence in Marvel's comic lineup during the Silver Age and beyond. What struck me as interesting is that it knew to include the different series, one-shots, and reprints, which is very wonky comic book terminology that lay people wouldn't necessarily know. Not bad. That's what I did with ChatGPT. Didn't go too much into it, but for just a glancing off the surface of thing, it's not bad, folks. It really is kind of good of what it can do. But, tried another product. Hold on 1 second. currently there are different types of chat AIs out there. I know Google has their form, which is called Gemini. Microsoft has their version, which I use for this next segment. Their AI bot is called Copilot. It seems to integrate with the Microsoft products, though you don't need to use any of those features of Microsoft to enjoy Copilot. Copilot is also tied into ChatGPT. Like the regular ChatGPT, it did a fantastic job with grammar and sentence structure. However, I think it's easy for Copilot to adjust the tone of the answer you want in return. Here, I believe I found a way to make the settings to be more creative, and you can see the answers I get back. Finally, in this version, it does give you citations where you can pull the information. It provides you with hyperlinks to backtrack the information given. Furthermore, you can copy and paste to something like Microsoft Word that includes all the formatting and hyperlinks, which I've also found useful. Now, I've done some chat research and some things, and they've done some really wonky things. I had this whole segment taped out when I got to the very end, which I'll tell you about in a minute, and I had to stop and redo the whole thing because ChatGPT also kind of gets wonky and schizophrenic and kind of crazy. So let me go to what I did with the Copilot. I asked Microsoft Copilot, how many forms of kryptonite are there and when did they first appear? Here's what Copilot said. Kryptonite, the notorious weakness, there's the creativity, of the Man of Steel comes in various forms. Let's delve into these glowing green rocks and their intriguing effects. Green kryptonite, the most well-known form, originates from Superman's home planet Krypton. When exposed to green kryptonite, Superman experiences weakness, nausea, and even death. It's like his cosmic Kryptonian kryptonite Achilles heel. So what it wrote, folks. Green kryptonite appeared in Superman 61 in November 1949. Red kryptonite. This variant causes unpredictable effects on Superman. Each piece of red kryptonite has a unique impact, such as altering his personality, granting temporary powers, or even turning him into bizarre creatures. It made its debut in Adventure Comics 252 in 1958. Pause for a second. I think either red or green had its actual first appearance in a radio show, but Copilot's pointing from the comic book appearances. Next is blue kryptonite. Unlike its green counterpart, blue kryptonite affects Bizarro, Superman's imperfect clone. It weakens Bizarro instead of Superman. It was introduced in Superman 140 in 1960. Gold kryptonite, this rare substance, permanently removes Superman's power when he comes into contact with it. It first appeared in Superman 158 in 1963. Then we have white kryptonite, which is lethal to plant life. It was introduced in Adventure Comics 279 in 1960. And then we have black kryptonite. Initially seen in the TV series Smallville, black kryptonite splits a person into their gold and evil sides. It later made its way into the comic book canon in Supergirl Volume 5, Number 2 in October 2005. It did pull Jewel Kryptonite. It didn't pull the comic book or the citation, but whatever it pulled, the thing had a complete schizophrenic meltdown. I couldn't even relate and put it into this thing. It was so completely out. It had nothing to do with comic books. But for the most part, for a comic fan like you and I, did a pretty good job without getting too wonky for a new comic fan to go, wow, this is pretty cool, without them getting lost in the lore. Again, I thought with this particular example, it made a good representation of kryptonite. Now, I even went even more wonky. I want to see how wonky I can get if I could actually trick Microsoft Copilot. Let's see how that worked out. Now, I wanted to try to trick the Copilot into something that would make it like not be able to answer. So I asked a question. Who's been a member of Fantastic Four and when did they join the team? Now, remember, Copilot will pull things and give you citations. Some of the places that it pulled stuff from was Encyclopedia, Screen Rant, Ranker, CBR, Wikipedia. It pulls all these things together and comes up with this big, almost like essay again. So again, here's what they said. Again, the question was, who has been a member of Fantastic Four and when did they join the team? Co-pilot. The Fantastic Four, a renowned superhero team in the Marvel Comics universe, for those who didn't know, there you go, has been more than just its core quartet. While the name suggests only four members, several other characters have at different times been considered part of the team. Let's delve into the roster. Mr. Fantastic, the team's leader and husband of the Invisible Woman, he was a former member of the Avengers and the Illuminati. Although presumed deceased in Fantastic Four 381, he was later discovered alive in Fantastic Four 407. That's actually true. Invisible Woman. The older sister of the Human Torch, she serves as the team's second in command. Susan is also the wife of Mr. Fantastic. During Reed Richards' presumed absence, she stepped up as team leader, and she was a former member of the Avengers. A little wonky, but not too bad. Human Torch, the younger brother of the Invisible Woman. Johnny Storm was once married to Elijah. He serves as an ambassador to the Inhumans, was part of the Avengers Unity Division. After being presumed dead in Fantastic Four 587, he was later found alive in Fantastic Four number 600. Thing, Benjamin Grimm, took on the mantle of the team leader during Reed and Susan Richards' first joint leave of absence. He's also a former member of the Guardians of the Galaxy and New Avengers. Crystal, a member of the royal family of the Inhumans. Crystal's younger sister, Medusa. She briefly replaced the Invisible Woman during her pregnancy with Franklin Richards, and again when Reed ensued, Richards took a leave of absence from the team. No citations for issues. That's okay. Medusa, another member of the royal family of the Inhumans. She is Crystal's older sister and wife of Black Bolt. She initially appeared as the amnesiac member of the Frightful Four, but later served as a replacement for the Invisible Woman during a marital separation from Mr. Fantastic. Medusa rejoined the team in Fantastic Four, Volume 4, Number 2. Luke Cage, formerly Power Man, a superhero for hire and husband to Jessica Jones. Luke Cage joined the Fantastic Four after Thing briefly lost his powers. Another Human Torch, later known as Nova, Frankie Ray, a longtime ally of the team. Frankie Ray had powers similar to Johnny Storm. She left Earth to become a hero of Galactus and was eventually killed by Morg in Silver Surfer, Volume 3, Number 75. Frankie Ray had a huge history in the Marvel mythos, and to condense it down into like three sentences is pretty good for a chatbot. She-Hulk, Jennifer Walters, a former member of the Avengers and cousin of Bruce Banner, the Hulk. Jennifer replaced the Thing on the Fantastic Four after the events of Secret War while he remained on Battleworld. She then rejoined the team in Fantastic Four, Volume 4, Number 2. Remember, this list isn't exhaustive, but it highlights some of the notable members who braced the pages of Fantastic Four over the years, exclamation point. Now, chat, co-pilot, also puts emojis in here. In this particular spot, I've got a nice shiny gold star here. But I wanted to know if I could get even deeper in this. So I asked, had Dr. Doom ever been a member of Fantastic Four? Here's what co-pilot said. Yes, indeed. Dr. Doom, the infamous villain, has had some intriguing stints with the Fantastic Four. Let's explore this further. Marvel 2-in-1, Annual Number 1. In this comic, Dr. Doom's heroic turn is highlighted. After the events of the Secret Wars, where reality was rewritten, Doom found himself scar-free on a brighter path. He became the infamous Iron Man, striving to protect the world instead of ruling it. In the storyline, he joins with Ben Grimm, Johnny Storm, as part of a new Fantastic Four. Alternate reality encounters. In the same comic, Doom encounters an alternate version of himself, one who remains villainous and has defeated the original Fantastic Four. This pivotal moment forces Doom to reflect on his choice and the path he could take. Thanks to the intervention of the new council, Doom makes a start of the convention, further solidifying his connection to the team. So while Doom's villainous history is well known, his occasional alignment with the team of Fantastic Four adds complexity to his character. Not bad in Fantastic Four. If I had the time, I would actually go back and see how verbatim did the chat co-pilot pull, or did it actually mix it up? I'm not exactly sure. And again, this is just stuff I pulled together, so if there's a few errors in it, oh well, I don't think it did a very bad job for a chat thing with just giving it just the most vague information, trying to trip it up. I couldn't do it. But I got out even wonkier. I got another trick question for it, and you'll find that in just a second. So once again, I decided to try to trick Copilot. I asked it, how many active flashes are currently in the ZC Comics Mythos? I wanted to see if it would get lost or what it would come up with. And here's what Copilot said. In the DC Comics Mythos, several species have donned the mantle of the Flash over the years. Let's explore some of the key speedsters and the roles. Jay Garrick, the original Flash, debuted in the Golden Age of Comics during the 1940s. His powers acquired through an experiment with hard wire were less refined than those of later Flashes. Jay Garrick is considered one of the elder statesmen of the DC Universe, but in terms of speed, he's the slowest Flash. Wallace West, also known as Kid Flash, is the current bearer of the Kid Flash mantle. Created as a replacement for fan favorite Wally West during the New 52 era, Wallace West faced initial backlash from fans. However, DC developed his character and he's become a respected hero. While not slow by any means, Wallace isn't the fastest as some of the other Flashes. Bart Allen. Barry Allen's grandson from the 31st century, Bart Allen started as hero Impulse. Bart's life got convoluted due to time travel and alternate realities. He can run faster than the wind, but he's not also the fastest Flash. Not bad for condensing a really complicated character into two sentences. Barry Allen. The Silver Age Flash is perhaps the most iconic. His appearance heralded the beginning of the Silver Age, and he discovered the multiverse by finding Earth 2. Barry's speed is legendary, and he remains a central figure in the DC Comics. Interesting, there's no talk about his death in Crisis, but I'm splitting hairs. Wally West, the original Kid Flash and later the Third Flash, has a significant legacy. His run in the Flash comics has received praise, and he's a beloved character among fans. Wally's speed rivals that of Barry Allen, making him one of the fastest Flashes. Jess Chambers, also known as Kid Quick, is the newer addition to the Flash family. As a non-binary speedster, Jess brings fresh energy to the role. Their speed is impressive, but they're still establishing the place in the Flash legacy. Yes, there's other ones missing, like regular Jesse Quick, Max Mercury, Johnny, her father. But it says, remember the title of the Flash is Flash is the hottest debated topic among fans. But those speedsters collectively contributed a rich and dynamic world of DC Comics, a book emoji, and a lightning bolt emoji. Not bad for a deep dive into the Flash mythos. So, here's my last shot at trying to trick the Copilot. Because as a comic book fan, I never understood this. So, I asked Copilot some information regarding Marvel legacy numbering. So I started off with, why does Marvel Comics use legacy numbering for its comic books? Copilot starts off with, Marvel Comics introduced legacy numbering in 2001 as a way to connect past stories with modern launches of ongoing titles. The concept involves adding a secondary number on the cover that accumulates all the comics from previous iterations of a series. Their legacy number reflects the overall count of issues, even when a series is relaunched and its number is reset. For example, Amazing Spider-Man 1999 series number 35 had a legacy number of 476 on the cover. Okay, not too bad. Might be able to get it if I was a non-comic book fan. Let's go on. Copilot wrote, in October 2017, Marvel took a significant step by restoring the original legacy numbering of its titles. This move involved in either reverting to the original numbering or creating legacy titles from a collection of short-running series and single issues. The goal was to restore the post-1960s numbering of most legacy titles that spent the longest amount of time under. So, for example, Captain America received credit for Tales of Suspense, issues he was not in, and as the longest running Captain America title, it toured with numbering from Tales. Incredible Hulk left out the first 6 issues of the original run, as they were never part of the sequence during the hundreds of issues that the series ran in the second volume. Venom has a more complex renumbering due to a raft of miniseries, but it also tries to preserve its continuity. Marvel's legacy numbering approach allows fans to follow the sequence history of their favorite characters and titles, bridging the gap between different eras and reboots. It's a fascinating way to honor the rich legacy of these iconic heroes and comic books. Some kind of man emoji and a bunch of books emoji. So, I went on for even more with legacy numbering. How did Marvel decide what to include for legacy numbering with the Fantastic Four? Co-pilot. Marvel Comics introduced legacy numbering in 2001 as a way to connect past stories with modern relaunches of ongoing titles. The concept involves adding a secondary number on the cover that accumulates all the comics from previous iterations of a series. The legacy number reflects the overall count of issues, even when a series is relaunched and its issue number is reset. For instance, here we go again, because it pulled again from another same source. The Amazing Spider-Man 1999 Series 35 had a legacy number of 476 on the cover. And we talk about the same thing. Explain legacy numbering as it relates to Fantastic Four, because it didn't give me exactly what I wanted. So let's see what this says. Co-pilot. Certainly, let's delve into the legacy numbering system as it pertains to the iconic team of the Fantastic Four. And it got pretty wonky here. It went through to the original run, ran from 61, had 116 issues during its first publication. Over time, Marvel relaunched a series of different creative teams and story arcs. These relaunches resulted in new number ones, but were still part of the overall Fantastic Four legacy. Marvel counted all the issues of the original 416 issue and subsequent relaunches to determine the relaunched legacy number. They included issue 600 and beyond, and a bunch of other stuff that looks a little wonky. And then at the end, it says the Fantastic Four comic book series has seen several relaunches over the years, which brings us fresh creative teams. And then let's look at some of the notable relaunches. It talks about the original run. It talks about Heroes Reborn, Mark Waid, Hickman, Fraction and Bagley, Slott's run. And not too bad. It was okay. Overall, Copilot did an okay job along with the regular Chat GTP. I'm going to wrap this up. This was extremely long. I went on a bunch of rabbit holes, but I just wanted to show you how good Chat is with doing the lexicon and stuff that's just for us comic book fans, but yet in a way that could rope in new comic book fans without them going, huh? What's all that about? Again, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Let's see where we go from here. This is kind of fun to do. Maybe I'll do something again in the future. Thanks again. Well, that's it for today's podcast. Again, I would love to hear from you, a fantastic comic fan, at gmail.com. Remember, new episodes every Wednesday. Thanks so much for listening to this episode, and I hope to see you next time.